One of the key reasons why companies fail is because of co-founder splits.
Fundraising is an art and a science. It underpins the ability to sell.
You can have the best products in the world, but if you're not focused on distribution and sales, it won't matter.
Being creative can save you a lot on customer acquisition costs.
The best time to meet investors is when you're not raising. If you look at Sarah Blakely, founder of Spanx, she never worked within fashion. However, what they did have is lived experience of the problem they were solving for, which is...
Welcome to The Startup Leap, the number one podcast interviewing startup founders who have taken the leap.
On The Startup Leap, we hear real, raw, and relatable stories of how they've navigated taking the leap. We're your hosts.
I'm Yvonne.
And I'm Maria.
And this is The Startup Leap podcast.
Any statements made by Maria, Yvonne, or The Startup Leap guests are solely their view and are not advice.
Hey everyone, welcome back to The Startup Leap, where we share real stories and lessons with founders who have taken the leap. I'm Yvonne.
I'm Maria, and today we're going to be talking about something really critical, especially for first-time founders, the five biggest mistakes first-time founders make. Now, if you're launching a startup, this is probably one you want to stick around for, to pretty much hear the mistakes that you would want to avoid as you launch your first startup.
Yes, so why are we speaking about this? If it's your first time, Maria and I have evaluated thousands of startups, invested over $200 million in companies, and invested in over 100 startups across Europe and Africa. So we are bringing those perspectives into the conversation today.
Yvonne and I have seen a lot, and we're going to be tapping into the real life experiences of our perspective looking at startups. This video may have something good for you, so stick around to find out. Also, we have a bonus at the end. So without further ado, let's dive in. Maybe the first one is selecting a profit problem. If you have started building or you're in the tech space, something you would have heard of is under market fit or problem founder fit. All of this is just to say that in this world today or 2025, what we are seeing is that then it helps to have some kind of congruence with the problem. As a founder, as a builder, as an innovator, you are likely to spot problems that are potentially opportunities. There are several founders who are tackling problems where they don't necessarily have a direct experience or insight or approach that might be unique to the market. So it's just mostly passion and not necessarily skill or expertise or unique insight that makes it less hard to tackle the problem.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about second-time founders as well, they tend to be very deliberate about the opportunities they chase, ensuring that it aligns with their experience, network, or industry knowledge and passion. They really leverage their previous lessons and avoid pitfalls that really focus on something that's going to be scalable, high impact, and generate outsized returns. Having said that, though, there are a number of founders who don't necessarily have a fit with the problem they're solving. So if you look at Airbnb, for example, Brian and Joe had no experience within hospitality or tech. If you look at Sarah Blakely, founder of Spanx, she never worked within fashion. However, what they did have is lived experience of the problem they were solving for, which is really key.
If we think about that, those founders built in a different time from now. It was 10, 20 years ago. We could argue that maybe that time, the talent that you even needed or the experience you needed to build a tech startup, it was just starting out. So in the case of Airbnb, for example, there were very few like really massive tech companies of that type in the industry. So they probably couldn't get experience. They needed to be the pioneers. But now today you have this backlog of incredible innovators who've built incredible companies. So now the bar is a bit different. You can build a company even without having direct experience in that company. Many people have done it. The thing to note is probably going to be harder to raise funding because most investors really, really over-index right now on you having some type of experience, or it's going to just take longer to get people on board. So for example, if you know the story of Airbnb, they didn't have it easy. I once met an investor who was at the pitch with the Airbnb founders. Like he remembered, he was telling me and he was like, Maria, it sounded crazy, but I think just to note there is that if you do decide to tackle an industry where you don't have experience, I think just get ready for the uphill battle of getting people on the line. You need to be incredibly resilient. Your willpower needs to be incredibly strong because it's probably going to be hard. If you read the story of Sarah Blakely, of the Airbnb founders, even the Slack founders who also don't have experience, they went through a very tough road. So it's not impossible, but it just makes it less hard if you have some experience and fit with the problem. And there's something called the concept of a right to the problem. I heard this once about 4 years ago at a conference, and it really stuck with me. And it is the idea that a problem exists, but there are many people who can tackle it. You have to have a right to be the one to tackle the problem. What's your right to the problem? Why you? Is it your lived experience, like Ivona said? Is it your background? Is it your experience? Is it a unique insight? Because you've been in that industry for so long, you know something that anybody who's looking outside in might not know.
Yeah, and I think if we look back on some of our previous episodes, one great example is, say, he worked within the logistics space. However, he stumbled across a mental health startup, realized very quickly that that wasn't where he had an edge. And so he went about, got some more experience within the logistics space before founding his own company. And I think speaking about that right to build within that space, I think it's just really helpful if you do have that unique insight and experience within the space. And if not, then just go very deep, immerse yourself, speak to customers, and just fully know everything you can before jumping and building.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mistake number two is building a complex first product without the customer. One of the common themes that has really come across in all of our episodes is how the founders have really spent time immersing themselves within the industry and knowing their customers. Before you get caught up in the big vision, assuming what you think customers want, adding features that you think customers want, rather than really validating it with users, you really just want to spend the time with customers, whether it's doing roundtables with them. Great example from one of our previous episodes is Michelle Kennedy, founder of Peanut. She literally went to parties, gave out rave stickers, just to get a sense of what it was that mothers wanted before she went out and built Peanut.
I think, Yvonne, you've said this on several episodes in the past. Spend time with the customer. In the initial stages, when you're building something, there's that dopamine and euphoria of building something new that can really cloud our judgment. In my experience as an investor, I've seen several founders who've gone to market with a thesis that they think is correct, and they don't demonstrate that depth of understanding of the customer. I like to hear founders' philosophical views of why the customers are using what they're using. It shows a level of understanding of the subconscious desires of a customer. And I think this is even more important in consumer products, because the best consumer products, they're cult-like, they're belief systems. People love them or hate them. One mistake to try to avoid is not spending enough time with the customer to knowing who they are and projecting your desire on what they want, and as a result, building a complex first product. If you are a builder especially, there's a tendency to remember that feeling of your first product. Oh my God, the pages, the logo, the icon. In my experience, with the best founders, they don't obsess on building that first product. Even if you are a builder at heart, you almost need to realize that if you build a perfect product that a customer does not use or want, it's zero. So you really need to anchor on the customer and avoid building a complex first product. We've also talked about this on previous episodes, actually, on how to think about that initial customer validation and really holding yourself back from building the first product. And like I say, the best founders often sell the product even before it's built.
Yeah, 100%. Work on a very simple first version of your product. It can be super scrappy. We've had founders come on the podcast who have literally built their first version of the product in Excel, in WhatsApp, and avoid building like a full-blown product. Because what does that mean? So you don't want to go about building an expensive product that essentially no one wants, right? So if you can do it in a very lean, scrappy way initially, get some validation and then build, that is the smart way to do things. Talk to those potential customers, involve them deeply in the first build of the product, and focus on solving one core problem if you can. Go back to Robin AI's episode with founder Richard Robinson, where he shared how the first version of the product, him and his team were literally reviewing the NDAs themselves. And it took some time before they fully automated that. So remember, go simple with the first version and build with your customers.
Absolutely. And the next thing, I guess, to think about that is a very common mistake is giving away the incorrect amount of equity. And I say incorrect because you can give away too little, you can give away too much. Some people really talk about the too much without the too little, or talk about the too little without the too much. Now, we've had an episode with the founder, Elizabeth, where she gave out too much equity in her startup at the earliest stages. And some of the time it's because you don't quite know what the benchmark is. If this is an episode you want us to touch on, please let us know in the comments, and then we will try to do a double click on this. But the thing about giving away too much or too little equity is, on one hand, if you give away too much equity, you make your startup uninvestable. The way VC works, and we've done an episode on this, is that you are giving away pieces of your company for growth capital that allow you really reach those supercharged outcomes. Now, if you give away too much of it, there's just not enough room to give to other investors, and you've given away too much for a little, for a small price. That's the first thing. Then the second thing is, even in VC, for later stage investors, Series A and above, they do have thresholds to which they require the founders to have ownership, because that's the only way they can rationalize that you will stay in the business and you're incentivized to continue to building the business. If you have too little ownership at the early stage, then why are you building? Because if you build, oh, I'm not going to benefit from this at the end of the day. So you're probably not going to be as incentivized. So that can create really tricky technical issues on the fundraising part. And then on the too little side, people don't talk a lot about this, but as a founder, there needs to be a balance between how you protect your equity and how you give it out. You should definitely not give out too much equity, but you also, if you're thinking of a venture-backed outcome, you will need to concede some equity for capital to be able to grow.
Absolutely. I think a really good rule of thumb is to just be really strategic, create a clear equity split plan, and think about a vesting schedule to protect everyone involved. So the way in which vesting schedules work is typically it'll be over a 4-year period with a 1-year cliff. This really means that founders do not earn any vested shares until that 1-year cliff period. And after that point, they then begin vesting their shares on a monthly or quarterly basis over a 3-year period. And I think that's really helpful. Typically, sometimes that happens at every single time you fundraise.
We've got a small favor to ask. If you're enjoying the podcast, hit that subscribe button.
Yep, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else, subscribing and following us is the easiest way that you never miss an episode. Typically, sometimes that happens at every single time you fundraise. So if you raise seed round, if you raise Series A round, you may have to revest those shares. But I think it's just a healthy way to ensure that everyone that is allocated equity is also incentivized to have that long-term skin in the game and to work on the bigger picture and be along the journey for the ride.
Absolutely. And I think even beyond the equity itself, one thing people don't really talk about is also the early hires and the stock option plans, just to incentivize people. Even if you have fundraising dollars, you really want to have a heavy equity compensation for your early hires, because those incentives need to be right. Also, beyond just the quantity of equity you give away, it's also the legal agreement. I've seen founders who have gotten into a very tricky situation with liquidation preferences, and any terms that are inserted into the agreements at the early stage just make the startup uninvestable in the long term. So it always helps to have a legal friend on tap that you can quickly just call, because, you know, we're not lawyers. You're not a lawyer as a founder. So it does help to have a lawyer explain what the implications are to you, what they consider standard in the market, especially when your investment documents are non-standard. So maybe it's not a SAFE or an ASA or etc. That's another thing to think about.
Now, another thing that I would say is a big mistake is you can have the best product in the world, but if you're not focused on distribution and sales, it won't matter. Now, it's often said that first-time founders focus on products, second-time founders focus on distribution. And this is something that I have witnessed. A recent example is founder of Granola, which is an app that I absolutely love. It's one of my apps for 2024. And essentially, the founder actually previously founded a journaling app. However, he decided to pivot away from that just because he couldn't figure out the distribution. So if you can't figure out distribution for the product you're building, there's a problem there. And you should really think about distribution as you think about building the product and who you want to serve very early in the journey.
When we talk about distribution, it's essentially how do you acquire customers at scale for less than they're able to bring to you with really strong margins. So even as an investor, we invest very much in the early stage. At the earlier stages, it's really about the team and the go-to-market, and of course, the broader market opportunity. The founders who tend to think of commercial, analytical, very precise ways of how they get their product to market tend to have these really strong outcomes, because they began with the end in mind. They're like, okay, how do I get this to 30,000 customers? And then their brains are thinking, okay, I need to figure out partnerships with these people who have 10,000 customers. I need to figure out how I get people through a funnel. If I go out there and I spend this on, you know, cost per click and with the conversion, I will get. They're very analytical minded, because at the end of the day, all of this conversation with business, it all comes down to, can you create value that people can commercially recognize for them to pay and for you to build a sustainable business? So if it all comes down to that as a business, then the commercial bits are really important. It's how do you make money? It's how do you make it sustainably? It's how do you acquire customers cheaply? And I will tell you here that being creative can save you a lot on customer acquisition costs. Do not underestimate how your creativity can allow you capture lots of customers cheaply in a way that allows you, gives you an edge up in building a sustainable business. As a founder, you're constantly selling. You're selling to customers, you're selling to investors, you're selling to early hires. That commercial mindedness is just one of the things that I found that the best founders that I've invested in have really prioritized.
Yeah, 100%. Coming back to some of our earlier episodes, sometimes it does require doing things that won't scale initially, but then an experimentation, and that will help unlock ways you can figure out that distribution. We do have a go-to-market episode as well, so do tap into that, listen to that, get some gems from that.
One other thing to think about is too much ego, wanting to be the smartest person in the room. Now, this one is very tricky because I do believe that ego is not necessarily a bad thing in and of itself, but it's too much of it that becomes a problem. Because if we think about it, sometimes you have something to prove as a founder. In fact, many founders oftentimes have egos because it's personal. It's something that they are trying to impress their will into the world. It's also very sensitive. What I found with the best founders, they know how to balance this. They know how to balance that ambition, that chip on your shoulder of feeling like, you know what, I'm going to show them. I'm going to show them that this thing will work, with actually really understanding where your strengths and your weaknesses lie and bringing really smart people around you. And at the end of the day, no matter how incredible you are as a founder, if you're building a large, high growth tech business, your success is going to be underpinned by your ability to get really smart, ambitious, and motivated people on board to collectively achieving that vision.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that when you are building a startup, it is a team effort. On every single one of the episodes that we've had today with our guest, one of the key things that they always reiterate is just how fundamental the team has been to their success, and ensuring that they incentivize the team, how important culture has been. And so you really should think about how you can really foster and bring on board people that are better than you, as Maria said. That is how you build a great company, because let's face it, like, without a great team, your startup is literally nothing. You cannot do all things.
You cannot, no matter how amazing you are, or just the work. Yeah. And Tim was actually quite honest about this in his episode. In his first startup, he was like, he realized that people were leaving and it was like, okay, it's me, I'm the problem, it's me. So he was like, okay, I've been chasing really high quality talent away because of my perception, I need to change. So that's another thing I think at the earlier stages, you know, as founders, as builders, that self-awareness is very key to knowing that, okay, I might be passionate about this. And there are times you have to put your foot down, right? Like, there are times that it's not so much about trying to get everyone in the room, but really being selective about those times and making sure that you're getting the value of the people in the room. And like Yvonne said, no matter how awesome you are, you need a team to be able to build a massive vision. And I think Sate said something in his episode where it was like, you want to be told that your idea is stupid. And it's like, that if to the extent that people can open up and share things that are actually helpful for you and the business, it absolutely helps.
Yeah, for sure. Founders are humble enough to listen and learn from their team, right? Advisors. Yes, you're going to be getting advice from all areas, like left, right, and center. And ultimately, it's down to you to make the decision, right? But you have to remember that leadership is really about empowerment. It's not about just showing off how much you know. It's really about the mission, why you're building, and wanting to grow with others on the journey to build something that's truly scalable. But ego is not always a bad thing. Michelle's episode, founder of Peanut, where she said that she felt that she had something to prove. She felt that she had that ego, but she also did it with a team at the forefront.
Absolutely. The next thing to think about is not having a fundraising strategy. Now, in this world today, in the way we think about startups, and especially the anatomy of startups, it is you are starting off with an idea or an early version of what a potential outcome could be, and it needs to be funded somehow. Even when you bootstrap, you are funding with personal funding or revenue. No business grows without some kind of funding. Funding is the lifeblood of the company. And fundraising is not just about capital. It's also about the type of capital. It's about the timing. It's about the terms. It's about the value add of that capital. We need to be thinking holistically about a fundraising strategy. One mistake I've seen founders do is just go in and not think about the strategy as well.
Definitely. I think that for many first-time founders, they really underestimate what it really requires to fundraise. Just being very specific in terms of the way in which you do your outreach, when you want to meet investors. In my personal opinion, the best time to meet investors is when you're not raising. But you have to be very strategic around it, because you don't want to be speaking to investors all the time, because you want to be heads down building. However, you do want to build those and cultivate those relationships before that point in which you're actually outraising, so that when you do go out to raise, it's not like a drawn out period. So one of the things that I personally really appreciate is when a founder reaches out and says, thinking about building this space, I've seen you've invested in this company that's in an adjacent space. I would love to get 15 minutes of your time to run through your thoughts, perspectives, any learnings that you could share. I think that's a really smart way of reaching out to investor, getting on their radar, building relationship with them when you're not necessarily fundraising.
Absolutely. And many of these fundraising announcements that you see, they've happened like 6 months ago. They're lagging indicators. And oftentimes when you see a successful fundraise, the founders have been very deliberate. It's just playing out. They've done a lot of work before they put in anything on that deck. They've really thought about the story. They've thought about the fit investors. They've thought about the metrics. They've thought about the narrative. Fundraising is an art and a science. And I think the best founders, especially now, really know how to think about that. And it underpins the ability to sell. Because if you think about it, as a high growth operator, you are likelier to want to join a funded startup than an unfunded startup. Because you're like, if we have funding, we have time to actually go find the market, and then there's more opportunity. So I think fundraising and the ability to fundraise and the ability to think strategically about your fundraising growth story is going to be very critical. The other thing I like to say is that sometimes you have to think of your startup as two products. On one hand, you're solving a problem for a potential customer. So whatever product it is, say, for example, Slack, it's a software product. But on the other hand, you're actually pitching a product to investors. You're pitching a financial product that is potentially going to give the investors multiple folds return later. On the customer side, it's what can I get in terms of value of using the product? But on the investor side, it's completely different. How much money can this startup make me in the next 5 to 10 years? Those pitches can be completely different. Founders who tend to think of both and really target the audience in terms of what they're selling, how they position it. So when you're speaking to an investor, there's value that the product can create to the customer, but you are in parallel painting the picture about how this can be an incredibly massive opportunity financially. Like Yvonne said, speaking with people long before you need to raise from them, building that relationship. And it doesn't necessarily have to be just VCs. It could be angels. Put people in a bit of a newsletter. When you start building those stories, start making the dots become lines, so that when you come, it doesn't seem like, where did this, come from? It's, this makes sense. I knew you were building this. Your background makes sense. It's just logical that we invest. So yeah, that's the one thing I'd add.
Yeah. And other episodes where you would hear how founders have gone about building relationships with investors and when the best time to do outreach is. So please do listen back. And also just don't forget, when you are thinking about fundraising, it's not just money that you want, but it's actually a partner that's going to come along on this journey with you for the next 10 years. So choose wisely every time. Now, a bonus one that we wanted to share with you is building a company with a co-founder that you don't know well. You'll be surprised, actually, one of the key reasons why companies actually fail is because of co-founder splits. When you are thinking about building a company with someone, just be really intentional that you take time and ensure that your missions and visions are aligned and that you actually enjoy working together and you can actually work together. We've seen multiple occasions where companies have split, where the founders have had a difference in opinion, or they just don't get along, they can't work together. It means that the company just doesn't go on some occasions, which is really unfortunate. In Tim's episode, he actually shared how he was very fortunate to have met his co-founder at an event. However, if he was building again, then he would actually be really intentional about working on a small project together with someone before actually going out and building. So if you do have the opportunity to really test that relationship, then I would really suggest that, simply because on the journey of being a founder, it's not an easy ride. It's a roller coaster. You're going to see people in all different scenarios, and you just want to ensure that whoever you're building with today is a person that you see yourself building with over the next 5 or 10 years.
Absolutely. And it's hard to find that out, right? Like, even if you spend some time with them, it's hard to find that out. But it's quite unfortunate when that's why a company fails. They might be having traction with customers. They might have been onto something in the market, but because the founders just can't get along and make the relationship iterative, as opposed to this giant leap where you're like, oh, we should just build a business. Oh, that sounds great. But you don't know each other. Start with a little bit of a project. Try to get a sense of who they are, what's important to them. If this is something they want to do at this time, it could also be timing. You guys might be good together. It might just not be a good time. The other thing I would say is that sometimes you might meet people who you seem good on paper, but good on paper doesn't mean actually like real life. There are people who work well together. They're synergistic. When they come together, they're larger than the sum of its parts. And then there are people who just don't have the chemistry. They're good individually, but when they come together, it just does not work out. So really think about what complementary skill sets you're bringing, but then also, do you gel as people? Do you have aligned vision? Do you have personalities that create value when it comes together? There are many high profile splits of founders where people have strategic direction conflicts and they're like, we're not seeing the world the same way anymore. And then there are people who, even if one company doesn't work out or they exit one company, they just go together and start something else because they realize, you know what, I know this person, we've worked together, I think we can continue to work together.
100%. Many examples, from Jawbone to many others. As we round up, we've covered 6 areas that we think are typical mistakes that we've seen from our experience. One of them is like selecting a poor fit problem. As we mentioned, you really want to ensure that if possible, you are associated with the problem you're solving, whether that's from lived experience or from your previous working experience. You really want to ensure that you have some sort of unique insight in the market. The other thing is just building a complex first product without the customer. Always put the customer first. Build with your customers front of mind. Have design partners if you can. If it's a consumer product, you know, you want to build with customers every step of the way. The other thing is just not focusing on distribution and sales enough. And as we mentioned, we see this particularly with first-time founders. You really want to ensure that you figure out go-to-market strategies. And in the initial phases, this may mean things that don't scale, but experiment, figure out what works, and you know, have a clear path to distribution. The other thing is like not having a clear fundraising strategy, just ensuring that you really understand how to go about fundraising, the timing that requires, building those relationships as early as you can, but also at the same time, not spending too much time thinking about fundraising before you've actually achieved any milestones that are worth raising off the back of, or, you know, just spending all the time speaking to investors when really your customers should always come first. And then building a company with a co-founder that you don't know well. If you can, go out there, experiment with them, work on something small, like a small project, and really just assess that relationship before you go out and you know, agree on something that you want to build when, you know, there may be cracks later on down the line.
So that's it, folks. Thank you for joining us. Keep sending in your questions, your feedback. Put it in the comments wherever you're watching or listening. And we also have an exciting guest episode next week. So don't forget to subscribe so you're the first to know. Thank you for watching and see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Leave a review. Tell us what you think of this episode on all of our platforms at the Startup Leap Pod. Do you have a question? Ask us and we'll ask our guests. Go to thestartupleap.io. See you next time.